Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back. We're visiting with my colleague at the Center for Security Policy, our Vice President for Research and Analysis, an extraordinary woman and great national security practitioner, Claire Lopez. And Claire, we've been talking about various aspects of this challenge of our time, notably here in America and elsewhere, brought to us by those who believe that it is God's will, Allah's will specifically, to impose this program of Sharia over not just their countries, wherever they may be, but here as well. One of those who is very deeply committed to this, as you know, is the president of Turkey, Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Over the weekend, there was something that went on. It's been described as a coup. It proved to be half-bliss and short-lived. But give us a little bit of background on Erdogan and his agenda and what it might mean that he has survived this uprising of whatever kind.
Yes, ominous developments. We need to step back really briefly to the 20th century when, after the First World War, what was left of the Ottoman Empire became the modern state of Turkey, led by Mustafa Kemal, came to be known as Ataturk, father of Turks, nickname. And he set Turkey on a modernization, secularized pathway that he intended to bring Turkey into the 20th century at that time. Four times subsequently during the 20th century, the Turkish army, the guardians of the Kemalist agenda, had to step in with either coup d'etats or interventions to set Turkey back on its Kemalist pathway. Well, here we are now in the 20th century, and this past weekend, the remnants of whatever was left of Kemalist adherents inside the military, and obviously they were not very many. They did not have the support of the entire military, and obviously also did not have the support of the majority of Turkish people in the major cities anyway, Istanbul and Ankara. They rose up. They attempted a coup d'etat while Erdogan was out of the capital, away from Ankara, and their intent was to turn Turkey away from its pathway towards a neo-Ottoman jihadist state, which Erdogan and his party, the AKP, have set it on. But as I said, they did not have enough support left among the military, which has been devastated, eviscerated by Erdogan over his tenure, first as prime minister, now as president. And this probably sounds the death knell for the Kemalist agenda, the modernization and secularization of Turkey, which will now be flung back centuries to a jihadist pathway, a jihadist program, which has got all kinds of implications for the United States and for NATO, of which Turkey is a member.
I want to explore those in a moment, but let's just allow me to play the devil's advocate here, because I think this is one thesis as to what happened. I must say, I find rather more persuasive the proposition that this was kind of like the Reichstag fire, which Adolf Hitler engineered in 1933. To intensify his quest and claim to power by having communists, I guess, set fire to the parliament in Berlin. And Claire, it just seems to me, and I don't disagree that the Turkish military has been ravaged by the purges and the prosecutions and the other efforts of Erdogan and his Islamists of the AKP party to bring them to heel, eliminate them essentially as the secular protectors of the Ataturk Republic. But it strikes me as unlikely in the extreme that were the military actually to try to take something like this on, that it would have been executed in such a completely hapless and ineffective way. Tease that out, if you would, please.
Well, what I would say is that I think the failure of the coup attempt and its short-lived nature are testament to exactly what you just said, which is how Erdogan and the AKP have ravaged the military. And again, through repeated purges, arrests, decommissionings, I guess you'd say,
And insinuating their own people into the ranks, of course, that too.
And making sure that those who are promoted to the top ranks are those, allied with the AKP and with Erdogan. As a matter of fact, as we know in this particular instance, this coup attempt, the coup leaders, who included a few top-level generals and some colonels, as well as many other rank and file, actually had to detain a number of the top Turkish military in order to stage the coup, because those other top military generals would not join them.
Yeah.
So they had to detain them.
Yeah.
In order to do what they did.
Hey, Claire, there's so much more to talk about here, but let's move along, because I do want to get to this question of whether the Gulenists are also implicated in this, as Erdogan has suggested. You've written, of course, an important book with our colleague Chris Holton at the Center, a monograph on the Gulen movement, and specifically its sort of academic empire in our own country. Tell us who these Gulenists are, and whether you think it likely that, in fact, they had a hand in this operation, or whether they're simply going to be one of the victims of the purges that follow from it.
Well, Fethullah Gulen is a Sunni Islamic scholar who began his Islamic clerical career professionally as a teacher, who gathered around him circles of students to oppose, at this time, back in the 20th century, the Kemalist agenda that Turkey was steadfastly still adhering to, the secularized form of government there at that time, and drew to him many followers and supporters, eventually established a network of schools in Turkey, established a formidable network of business interests there and eventually around the world, was exiled to the United States in 1999, where he's lived in the Poconos in Pennsylvania ever since, and now has established here in the United States a network of schools, charter schools, as well as many cultural centers, and some of his business interests are present here too. There's been a lot of concern, as Chris Holton, our colleague at the center, and I wrote in the book, Gulen and the Gulenist Movement, a concern about those schools, about some of the all-expense-paid trips that have been offered to teachers, school administrators, students, legislators, journalists, and others, to promote the Gulenist ideology and agenda. By the way, reading from his own website, which is full of his writings online, it's very easy to see that he is very much in line with the Muslim Brotherhood. He is a jihadist to the core. And in this, he shares ideology with President Erdogan in Turkey. And for a long time, indeed, they were allies
indeed,
in Turkey.
Very close allies for the same purpose of essentially taking over the Ataturk Republic and turning it into an Islamist state. Hey, Claire, let me just ask you, because you're deeply knowledgeable about these guys and what they're up to. The narrative that is being pushed at the moment by many in the press about Gulen is that he is a Sufi. And his form of Islam is very moderate. They cite some of his writings and his followers to make this case. I take it from what you've just said that if there's not a dime's worth of difference between his form of Islam and the jihadist Sharia-adherent form of Erdogan, that this would not be so.
Well, I mean, let's be clear about what a Sufi is. While it has the attributes of mysticism and contemplation attached to it, it certainly does not mean that Sufi is now divorced from jihad. Quite to the contrary, one of the most senior and authoritative of all Islamic scholars was Al-Ghazali, who was himself a Sufi, but very much a jihadi as well. And more to recent times, let's look at Shamil Basayev.
Claire, hold this thought. We're going to have to pause for just a moment. When we come back, we'll talk more with Claire about these traditions within Islam and what they might mean, especially as practiced by the Saudis, our putative friends. That and more straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.